Human Resources and Employment Law Tips and Advice in association with the HRSuite.com.
Yeah, Caroline Reedy is with us on the line with the HR Suite. Caroline, good morning to you. Thanks for joining us again this month.
A pleasure as always, Gerry. Thank you for having me.
And if you have any questions or queries on employment law or issues, then do get in touch with us on the programme this morning. Get your questions in for Caroline. We have a couple of queries to get to. One comes in this morning. Could Caroline please outline employment law around smokers and cigarette breaks? Can an employer specify non-smoker in an advert or ask an interviewee if he or she smokes, bearing in mind that in some businesses smoking is not compatible with company image and productivity, says this listener. And just to clarify about productivity, they say in the case of teamwork, if one or two members go out for a smoke, then work is held up and non-smokers stand idly by. This is an interesting one I wouldn't have thought of before. What is the situation with it, Caroline?
So I suppose there's no additional obligation to give additional smoking breaks to smokers. And it is one that comes up quite a lot where people would, you know, have an issue where obviously the entitlement is after 4.5 hours, you're entitled to your 15-minute break or your lunch break after 6 hours, you know. But obviously, sometimes the smoker might pop out for 10-minute breaks every so often, to depending on how many cigarettes they feel they need. And that causes, as your listener has rightly said, conflict between that's not fair on me or whatever the case may be. So the legal obligation from an employer perspective is there is none. I mean, there's no specific.
You have your breaks under the law and under the way you've run your company. And there's no specific smoker's break or smoking break, 5 minutes here, 10 minutes there, throughout the day, provided for under employment law.
No, but let's be realistic. In most organisations where you have somebody who does smoke, they do pop out for their smoking break. And ultimately, I suppose, it's the give and take piece, isn't it, in terms of trying to be fair and reasonable.
Yeah. Look, it thankfully, it's less of an issue now because fewer people are smoking, although I know there's vaping that's going on now and all that.
Vaping is getting very popular now, and definitely, you know, the same concept applies. And for some, I suppose, businesses, it doesn't, you know, sit right with the brand or image of the organisation when you see people outside the door, for example, of an establishment smoking. And a lot of employers have taken the proactive approach of designating a smoking area out the back for that reason. So I think, you know, we're all focused now on well-being and trying to look after people as best we can. So we're encouraging people to obviously be as healthy as possible. But I think we just have to still accept we will have smokers or vapers, and you want to try and be fair and reasonable to them and not make them feel like outcasts either, you know?
Is it a tricky thing in the balance here, just for the listener, about what happens with the non-smokers? Are they going to say, hold on a second, why are they getting these 2 or 3, 5, 10 minute breaks throughout the working day?
I think we've always had that over like all of time, you know, where they'll always be that. But at the end of the day, I suppose, there's no legal obligation from an employer to set smoking breaks or anything of the like. And I think most people would be respectful if they're nipping out for a cigarette, they nip out, they have their cigarette and they come back. It doesn't turn into another 10-minute coffee break every hour. And that's where I think the resentment can, you know, build in, where somebody is going for a cup of coffee and 15 minutes every 2 hours, and the rest of the employees having their normal breaks, which are the 15 minutes. So I think it's being reasonable from both parties, and that give and take approach, I think, is what generally, hopefully, common sense will prevail.
Yeah. Okay. All right. That's one of those things. If anyone has any queries or any their own stories and situations about that, how your employer deals with it, get in touch with us in the programme. Another query comes in. It says, I would like to ask Caroline, if you're working in a company and the office staff get paid a salary and the production staff get paid a wage, just wondering if you wanted to get paid a wage instead of a salary, what are your rights if you ask if it's possible to change? Now, I would have thought they're one and the same thing, but that's just my level of knowledge in the situation. What's the response to this, Caroline?
So normally the difference, Gerry, is if you're on a salary, you're paid for all your hours. So if you work additional hours, it's still included in your salary. Whereas if you work a weekly wage, you're on an hourly rate for 37 and a half or 39 hours. And if you work an extra hour over that, then you get paid for that extra hour. So the key piece here is everybody needs to get paid at minimum, the minimum wage for every hour that they work. So no salary can, you know, incorporate a number of hours that you're working. That means when you divide it out, you're on less than the minimum wage. And believe it or not, that's an issue often in sales type jobs where people are on a very low basic salary, and then there might be very high, you know, incentives in terms of commissions, etc. Yeah. However, it can't be less than the minimum wage. And I would say to that listener, if you would like to renegotiate, that's exactly what you would be doing. You'd be chatting to your employer to say, look, I'd actually prefer to be on an hourly rate, or I'd prefer my terms and conditions to change. And that's a negotiation then for the employer and the employee, because it's whatever you accepted in that original job offer and that contract of employment, or anything you've negotiated since, that's ultimately what you're entitled to. But everything's up for negotiation in that regard.
Yeah, if you're going for a change on this, it may affect the bottom line and it may affect the labour costs of your employer. So they'll have to take that into consideration when you're making this request.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay. If you have a view on that, get in touch with us on the programme on 0667 123 666. You can text and WhatsApp us on 083 300 300. More queries to get to with Caroline Reedy after we take these.
Human Resources and Employment Law Tips and Advice in association with the HRSuite.com.
Yeah, we're talking with Caroline Reedy of the HR Suite. Caroline, a query in here. What's the difference between the living wage and the minimum wage? A listener wants to know.
So currently we have what is the living wage is an aspirational element of what the government is saying they'd like to get to. And the living wage is what economists have calculated that people need to live and pay basic bills, including food, energy, rent, etc. And some organisations are using the living wage now as part of their marketing to say, we're starting and we're paying the living wage, okay. Whereas the minimum wage is what is the statutory legal minimum that everybody gets paid in Ireland at the moment.
Okay, so the living wage is this kind of, look, this is what we think it will take for you in this day and age to survive, to live, to be able to afford a lifestyle in this particular economy. And it's about the gap, I suppose, between that and the minimum wage.
Exactly, Gerry. And for a lot of people, I suppose, you know, basic pay now is really important to people in terms of what they're actually taking home every week and having certainty about that. So a lot of the new legislation that's come in over the last 12 months is very much focused on that certainty of income, which is very much linked to the concept of people knowing how much they have at the end of every given week. And that concept of the living wage is what is being spoken about a lot more. And what was the low pay commission is now moving towards that living wage and that concept of making sure people have a basic amount to live, basically.
And look, is that part of it then that there's a specification there in terms of, and particularly, you know, I suppose what I'm trying to say is an increased concentration on that because of the inflation situation we're dealing with for the first time in a long time.
Absolutely. And I suppose for a lot of organisations now, they've got requests for pay reviews and pay increases from staff. And we've seen people, you know, change jobs because of salary and better terms and conditions, etc. So I suppose that making sure that, you know, is reasonable and fair for people is hugely important. And I think to retain people now, having that basic living wage or having that basic minimum wage and giving people flexibility and other things, a lot of organisations have done a root and branch review to make sure that they are meeting that obligation.
Yeah, indeed, that is the case. Back to the smoking, a listener wants to know, can employers specify non-smoker in an advert, or can you ask someone, an interviewee, if he or she smokes? I imagine you can't, because it's a personal issue, or am I wrong?
You can ask, absolutely. There's no issue in asking. I suppose the issue is why you are asking. That's the key thing, really, Gerry, isn't it?
Yes.
And why you need to know that. I suppose you shouldn't, unless it's a job that's, for example, you're working in a kitchen, and it might be very relevant if it's a chef, for example, etc. But saying that you're going to have a lot of people who work in kitchens who equally, you know, are going to be smoking. Yeah. So you can ask, but I suppose it's the why you're asking is the important thing.
Yeah.
It shouldn't influence the person getting the job or not.
Or not.
And I've seen very few occasions that people are asked that now, Gerry, to be honest.
Yeah.
It used to be something that was a lot more common years and years ago, but now it's very much based on competencies of can the person do the job, whether they smoke or not isn't relevant to that overall.
Yeah. Okay. Caroline, new rights are in. March 30th legislation was passed, the Work-Life Balance and Miscellaneous Provisions Bill. What increased rights now do carers and parents and other people have when it comes to work-life balance?
I suppose it's a really positive piece of legislation for everybody, because what it means now is two things. One is people have the right to request remote working, and that's open to anybody. So any person who works in a job that is eligible for remote working, you know, some jobs won't be, but if your job can be done remotely, you're entitled to ask, and your employer has to come back within a specific period of time to either facilitate your request or give you a reasoned explanation as to why that's not possible. And secondly, this piece of legislation has introduced flexible working options for those that have family and caring responsibilities. And as we know, remote working is one form of flexibility. But if you have caring or family responsibilities, now you can ask for other forms of flexibility. So you may ask for a 3-day week, you may ask for, you know, early start or a later start, etc., in line with those requirements.
Is that for someone, Caroline, then, whose circumstances might have started off at one situation, something happens in their family life or the family member, they're pulled into caring more or need to do it before, they might have been in a situation where they just have to leave their job to do it. Does this mean that they now have the right to at least ask and get into a discussion with their employer about changing to accommodate what they have to do at home?
You're spot on, and I suppose it's not even just people who have, you know, specific caring responsibilities.
Yeah.
It's those that have family responsibilities as well. And you're so right. The reason for this is so people can stay in the workforce. And as we know, it's so hard to get people anyway that people are offering lots of different forms of flexibility. But this, I think, will be really relevant to somebody who's in a job. They're really struggling with the start time in the morning, or they're really struggling with the finish time in the evening. And now this hopefully will, you know, alleviate some of that pressure if the employer can look to accommodate them. As all of these pieces of legislation, it's in line with business requirements, but a lot of the reasoning and rationale going back a number of years ago was, look, it doesn't suit, we don't do that.
Mm.
Whereas this legislation now means that's not a good enough reason. We've seen a lot of jobs can be done remotely. We've seen a lot of jobs can be done with that bit of flexibility. And one other key point with it, Gerry, is, you know, the way sometimes people say, well, look, I can't have all my receptionists starting later in the day.
Yeah.
You need to consider each request as it comes. So normally whoever requests it first has the best chance of getting that flexibility that you mightn't be able to give to everybody who does that same job. But the requirement is at the point in time somebody asks, you need to consider it then.
Yeah, that's a consideration when it comes to that kind of situation. And will this legislation help keep more women in the workplace, do you think?
I think definitely, because a lot of the family and caring responsibilities probably still rest with women, even though a lot of men we've seen taking parental leave, parents leave, etc. So the responsibility is definitely getting shared more. But I think it's definitely going to give people, without doubt, a lot more work-life balance, which is huge, I think, when people are trying to juggle family and life. And I think more and more we're seeing people put that up there as a really high priority when they're choosing whether they'll stay in a job or they look for a different one.
Okay. All right. Caroline, listen, we're going to leave it there. My thanks to you for talking to us in the programme this morning. That's Caroline Reedy of the HR Suite. If you have any more questions or queries, get in to us on the programme and we'll get them to Caroline for next month.